It seems that James Brown, particularly with Bootsy, and then morphing into George Clinton with Parliament Funkadelic, and of course, Bootsy, a big part of that.
Sure.
And then guys like you starting to bring it forward. And of course, that popping sound with bass playing. Could you tell us about popping?
Right.
What is that?
Right. And I like that sound. I like popping or thumping or plucking. I'm not a big fan of the word. I know a lot of people that use slap bass, and I've never been a fan of that terminology. It just sounds kind of unmusical to me, you know, where like popping or thumping or plucking, that's kind of feel feels more musical to me. So, you know, with me, you know, listening to players like Bootsy, like, you know, Larry Graham in particular, you know, who's the guy that invented the style that you're talking about right now. Even, you know, when I was a kid, even like Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers too, as well. You know, the bass guitar, if you think about music in general, you know, what I think the first electric bass came out like 1951, 52, you know, the Fender P bass at the time. In the whole history of music, we're still babies. And so whatever, all these new techniques, it's like there's so new, many ways to approach that. So with me, I kind of did a weird amalgamation where, you know, I, of course, got on a thumping and popping. When I was a kid, I worked in this music store. I remember I was in eighth grade, and I worked there through a summer, and this guy came in, and he was like in a R&B group, and he came in and started, I was already playing, but he came in and started thumping one day, and my eyes probably got, you know, huge, and I was like, I want to do that. Dude, how do you, so he would come in every once in a while and kind of give me a little tip, so I started going there, but then the typical thing is to do is to use a pick when you play for that kind of stuff. I never like using a pick because, first off, it relegates your technique to just using a pick. And I'm such a space cadet on top of that anyway. I don't want to have to find one every time before I played too as well. Blonde hair kicks in every once in a while. I apologize. So I started actually using my thumb almost as like a pick, not even playing like funky stuff, necessarily more almost like rock stuff, but almost like up and down style with pick. So when I started getting more and more into the funk stuff, I learned, you know, I would learn all the James Brown bass lines, but then I learned the rhythm guitar lines on guitar. Then I was like, you know what? I bet those would sound cool on bass too. So I took that technique of using my thumb like the pick, but playing those rhythm guitar parts on bass too as well. So it was kind of like an up and down. So then I kind of incorporated that with my thumping and popping that I already knew how to do. And it's kind of turned into this crazy style, but the kind of music I do, it kind of works. And, you know, because of that, I don't even tour with a guitar player because between my technique and all the effects and stuff I use, I almost kind of a lot of times take up that frequency range of that guitar player. So it almost seems more freeing, at least for right now, to not use a guitar player, at least in the live setting.
Yeah. And then I tell you what, that popping, when you put that with a drummer, oh, wow, watch out.
Sure, sure. It was very percussive. You know, I always say, you know, when people ask me my style, I said I was a drummer when I was a kid, and I always say I'm a drummer that plays notes. And, you know, that's the way when I approach a bass line, I almost think of it more I'm creating a beat, but I'm playing a beat on my bass, but the beat has notes. That's it.
I tell you, another thing that I've noticed with your ensembles, and with you in particular, when it comes to stage attire and presentation, could you tell us a little bit about that? Because that's as much a part of the music as
The playing. You know, and I think it's a byproduct of it, you know, as well as, you know, we're talking a lot about these funk influences, but I was a huge Bowie fan growing up, Talking Heads. And been the music in this show, it's always been kind of the same thing. You know, it's almost multi-platform type genre to me. So yeah, when I was a kid, you know, the music is what got me in my ears and then the visual is what's got me in my eyes. So it just always felt more, for me, performing. Like if I went up there in t-shirt and jeans, I would feel like I was a poser. You know, God bless you if that's what you do. That's great. I'm not saying that's not good or that's good. That's, you know, Bruce Springsteen would look silly if he dressed up like I did, you know?
Right.
But for me, that's freak bass and that's who I feel, you know, it's almost kind of like Superman going and finding the phone booth, I guess, you know? And
yeah,
that's where it works.
And that's for real, freak, because you've got a great eye for presentation.
Well, thank you.
I mean, I'm looking at you now across the microphones and it's like, my man, looks good here.
Oh, well, thank you.
But, you know, you do have an eye towards presentation. When you go to your website, your photo shoots must be a ball.
They're great. And I've been really lucky to work with some amazing photographers too. Tony Aerosmith, who's an amazing photographer here out of Cincinnati, Stu McClay, and another amazing photographer, and that really helps quite a bit. Angie Wilson, who is my manager too as well, she's got an incredible eye both with editing and also with the video side of stuff for sure as well, because she does a lot of directs a lot of the videos we do. You know, you just kind of get drawn to those kind of people that see that same vision that you do. I remember I read this great interview with Wayne Coyne from Flaming Lips, and he was saying, you know, there's so many, and you know, Flaming Lips are notorious for having the craziest stage shows ever. And he said, you know, I always meet so many musician friends that are like, wouldn't it be cool if we did this thing live on stage or this cool? But then a lot of people don't do it. They talk about it, but they don't do it. And it's like, you know, if you just take that step and do it a lot of times, that's where the magic actually happened. So, yes, that's kind of where it works for us.
Yeah, it's kind of like a funk circus, brother.
Yeah, that's kind of what it is. Yeah, like Barnum and Bailey coming to town when Freak Bass comes in, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So you've endorsed a new line of basses.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. I met this company. I do this thing every year called the London Bass Guitar Show, which is out of the UK. It's kind of like for musicians, there's something called the NAMM Show, which is a big music trade show. It's kind of like a NAMM Show mix, but more bass-centric with master classes and performances and stuff like that. So I was over there in London, met this company out of New Zealand. They're called Stonefield. And we ended up connecting at the show. And he said, would you be interested in being an endorser for our company? Because we haven't really branched into the United States yet. And I said, that would be great. And as we talked and went on, he said, well, how about we make a Freak Bass signature model bass, which is great. And so, and not just for me, you can buy it even if you're, you know, it's not just a Freak Bass bass. Anybody can buy the Freak Bass signature model. And the real cool part is when we filmed like the demo for the video, he's kind of a superhero fan like I am. I'm a superhero and a Star Wars and stuff like that. And he said, as opposed to us just doing your run-of-the-mill, sitting in the studio, going through the knobs and stuff like that, how about we fly you over here to New Zealand, which was Christchurch, New Zealand. So they flew me over there and they got the director that did, he did a couple of Depeche Mode and Nirvana videos. And we did this almost little mini film. And if you look at it on for YouTube, it's amazing. Just look up Freak Bass, Looking for the Bass Maker. And it's me in New Zealand crossing, a lot of it we filmed where they filmed Chronicles of Narnia and some of the Hobbit stuff. And it's me going across the countryside, almost like looking for a lightsaber or something like that. And I finally, in this old Russian car, in this abandoned lot, I found the bass. You open it up, it's got this smoke and all this kind of stuff. So, and it's, I think it's Stonefield, he's got a catchphrase, the bass you always wanted or something like that. And that's kind of where I find it there. So that was incredible on itself. So they're great, great company. And they just made me a double neck too, which I've been playing live too lately.
You're known primarily as a four-string bass player. So how come you've stuck with the four-string where a lot of guys have gone to the five and six-string?
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, for me, you know, as futuristic as I am, I'm still traditional in that sense. Whether it be James Jamerson or, you know, we talked about Bootsy or, of course, Jaco. And, you know, I went through my Jaco phase like every other bass player ever did. And part of it actually is the physicality of, like, when you get into the five and six string, between each string gets closer. And that little distance makes a huge difference for me, you know, and it's especially with the, I play pretty heavy, as we talked about earlier, and I like having that space in there. So, you know, unless you want a super, super wide neck to spread the strings out, and that's a whole other comfort issue too as well. If you want to have like the normal size neck, they have to naturally put the strings closer together. So that always kind of mess with me when I play a five string. And if I want to go lower, I just use a pedal and use an octave for pedal and I'll go lower that way. So yeah, and I love many, many five string and six string players, but four string's always been my jam, and I'm sure it always will be.
Yeah, I'm a four string guy.
Yeah,
myself.
If anything, if I was to do something unique with a string, I'd go the Tony Levin route, and I'd probably go to three or a two string bass. You know what I mean? You know, I think Tony had a three string during the King Crimson days, or band like Morphine, where he actually had a two string bass. You know,
right.
I'm more from that school of stuff. You know, it's fancy, and you know, and all the crazy little antics as I do as bass. It's, you know, my favorite bass line of all time. If you did like put me in Desert Island, you can listen to this for the rest of your life. Is Papa Was a Rolling Stone? You know, three notes. You know, and it's those three notes for 12 minutes long, you know. So I love all the icing and all that kind of steak, but the cake's got to be, you know, really strong before all that icing tastes right.
Absolutely.
You know?
So, yeah. You know, if you take those three notes and you know where to put them,
that's it.
With the drums.
Yep.
Oh my God, you are building a brick.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah. And the space is, you know, when you're not playing, is that part of the music too? That's a huge part.
That's what Miles Davis taught me.
Big time. Perfect example there too as well. Questlove was talking about, it might have been James Jamerson, but he said something along the lines of he plays the space hard. And I thought that was a great line.
Yeah.
You know?
And I tell you what, man, Questlove, as far as modern musicians.
Oh, he's amazing. And he's a huge music historian, too. He knows what musician played on the 1971 version of Roberta Flack's, blah, blah. You know, I mean, he can name it, you know, every musician on the album. So he knows what he's talking about. Yeah.